Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Caroline, Whitley, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios. And today the studio is Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. Predators in action tonight, taking on the Anaheim Ducks. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. Joining us now is Mitch Light of The Athletic, college football junkie. Mitch, we had a wild weekend in college football. Massive blowouts, coaches were fired, but I want to start with what we're going to find out tonight, and that is the new college football playoff rankings. And of course, right now in November, they don't really matter, but looking at what Georgia did, and it was a statement win over Ole Miss after beating Missouri, who just put the beat down on Tennessee. Mitch, I feel like Missouri should be the number one team in the country. What do you think?
Missouri or Georgia?
Did I say Missouri?
I know, yes. Missouri beat LSU.
I did not mean that.
It must be awesome. So, but just if we wrote it, every team that
No. LSU beat Missouri, Mitch. LSU beat Missouri. Don't
know,
you forget it. I meant Georgia.
So, yes. And
thank
that
you.
That is a very good question and good point. Now, if you do a poll and you're a voter and you have Ohio State number one last week and they beat Michigan State, who's not very good. Sorry, Derek.
Hey, I'm accepting it, man.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sometimes going to look in the mirror and just say, you know what? Not happening this year. And so then you say, okay, how do you move them down? But if the College Football Playoff Committee, which claims they rip up their rankings every week and they look at, everyone's resume updated, which in theory is how you should do rankings, then there's a rational argument for putting Georgia ahead. So that's the argument why Georgia would be ahead. If your argument is just, well, there's only one more week, and it's only one more week since, one more week of data, and Ohio State won big, how do you move them down? Like you said, Caroline, it doesn't really matter, but I think that will be interesting to watch. And I'm just curious about Michigan. Like, Michigan, obviously, a really nice win over Penn State, but you also, saw not some warts. There's some questions about them offensively. I don't think they'll move down, but is there an argument that Florida State has a better resume than Michigan, even after Michigan went to Penn State? Probably there is. So that's maybe something to watch.
That's exactly what I wanted to ask you about next, is Michigan. And I know that Tony Petitti, the head of the College Football Playoff Committee, already said that, look, we're not going to take into consideration the investigations into Jim Harbaugh, but that was before Jim Harbaugh was suspended. I don't think the College Football Playoff wants to get into being a judiciary committee and getting involved into investigations, but do you think the CFP should or will now take into account what is going on behind closed doors with Michigan with the investigation of the sign stealing?
Well, if he's suspended just the regular season, which right now looks like it will be, unless there's some injunction or whatever the term is, then I don't think the playoff committee should do anything. Like the only thing – I don't necessarily agree with this line of thinking, but the only thing you could do is, okay, let's say they lose to Penn State and he wasn't there. Oh, well, they get the head coach back, so maybe we look at them differently. But they won. So it's – and there's no way they would forgive a loss just because Jim Harbaugh wasn't there. So I bet the playoff committee would – if you gave him some truth serum, we'd probably like to see Michigan lose to Ohio State so they don't have to evaluate Michigan in that regard, because I don't think a one-loss Michigan that does not win its division would make it. But I believe what they say, that they're not considering what's going on, behind the scenes or looking at Michigan differently because they may or may not have had an advantage with the sign stealing.
Now, Alabama, Mitch, do you think – this is what they had envisioned for Jalen Milroe? Because it seems like every week he's getting a tad bit better. And had they not had, you know, because this is what Nick Saban does. He schedules hard games at the beginning of the season, or at least that first one, and their hard game was against Texas, and they end up losing that game. But after that, you started to see, even though they did play a little quarterback, you know, shuffle there, eventually they settled on Jalen Milroe, and he's starting to be that quarterback that I think everybody envisioned him, at least in Tuscaloosa. He was a highly recruited quarterback, and now you're starting to see why this guy was a five-star guy.
Obviously, this is what they hoped he could be, but my guess is this is not really what they expected. If they thought this is what he was, they probably would not have been so active in the transfer portal after spring practice. They probably wouldn't have benched him for the South Florida game. Now, you could argue that that's maybe was a motivating factor. That's, you know, he sitting out for a game helped him. I get that. But if you really thought he was your guy, you would want to get him as many reps as possible, and you wouldn't have benched him. So I think they are very, very, very pleasantly surprised, thrilled with where he is right now. But my guess is they did not. Like, he's a third-year junior. I don't think he's going to the NFL. I don't think he's NFL ready or anything like that. My guess is if you ask Nick Saban in the spring, who's going to be your starting quarterback in 2024, he would have no idea. He'd be like, I don't know if the guy's on the roster right now. But if you ask him right now, he's like, we've got our guy. Jalen Milroe is going to be our starter next year. So I guess my answer is they did not necessarily expect him to be this good.
Now, Texas A&M, excuse me, has taken the steps that maybe other programs wouldn't have taken, especially with a massive contract to a coach. And them knowing they still have to pay him for the next 4 or 5 years. Some universities choose to let it play out a couple more years and then make that switch. But A&M has had enough. They end up parting ways with Jimbo. Who do you think is the next head coach at A&M? And is A&M built and ready for a Urban Meyer type of coach?
I don't think it'll be an Urban Meyer. I mean, we know they want to take a big swing.
Yes.
My guess would be, my choice would be Mike Elko. He was the defensive coordinator down there. He's been in a lot of different types of schools. He's recruited at Notre Dame. He's recruited at Wake Forest. He's recruited at Duke. He obviously knows what he's doing as a head coach. I mean, if you watch Duke play this year, now they're struggling right now. They're on their third string quarterback. Riley Leonard's hurt, but they almost beat North Carolina in a game they had no business winning. They beat Wake Forest 2 weeks ago with almost no offense, and they just gutted it out. They got outgained almost 2-1. They play with a certain toughness, and they play with tremendous, like, they look like a great team speed on defense, and, you know, they don't have the most highly recruited kids, and he has really overachieved there. So I've been very impressed with what he's done there. Now, the question you have to ask Mike Elko, and we never want to know what makes a guy tick. Like, he could be just, you know what, I've been a coaching lifer. I'm the head coach in the ACC. There's not a ton of pressure on me. It's a private school. I don't know what he makes, but after this year, he'll probably be making $4 or $5 million. He might look and say, I don't need that mess down there. I've been there 2 years. I know what can happen down there if you go 9-3. Like, that's not good enough. So I'm not saying he would turn them down, but I think we can't just assume that the guys at the top of their list would be interested. Like, Lance Leipold at Kansas has said that, you know, he's Kansas for life, but who knows? A guy like that, again, he's been in the junior college ranks, and he's come up, and the fact that he has a chance to coach at a school that can win a national championship, maybe that's too much for him to turn down, but it's definitely a very, very attractive job.
Here's my chaos scenario, Mitch. And this isn't going to happen.
You love the chaos.
I love the chaos. This isn't going to happen, Kelly? But Brian, I mean, Kelly? But money is involved.
Brian Kelly.
Don't you poach my guy. We already did the poaching. Mike Norvell.
Yes.
The Tallahassee to Texas pipeline. If Texas A&M takes a Florida State coach for the second time in a row, that is my chaos scenario. Or Lincoln Riley.
Yeah. Norvell, I 5 years ago, you say, this is a dumb point, because I would say 5 years ago, why do you leave Florida State for Texas A&M? Well, someone actually did that. But my point was, that was sort of before the financial divide became so great. Like, the reason you leave a Florida State is now because they're in the ACC and you don't know what their long-term future is going to be. But I think he's got it really rolling at Florida State, so I would be surprised. I've seen, you know, Lincoln Riley is he obviously coached at Oklahoma. Things aren't going great at USC. I don't see him jumping ship after 2 years there, but I don't think that's 100% out of the question. I'll put it that way.
Mitch Light with us from The Athletic. Mitch, do you think this is a good time to play Georgia if you're Tennessee? You're at home. You just got whipped. Maybe Georgia lets the guard down a little bit after Georgia really flexed against Ole Miss. I feel like maybe you can talk yourself into Tennessee's got a shot here.
Yeah, I'm not.
You're not buying it.
I'm not buying it.
You're not buying it.
Kirby Smart is so focused. Like, you know, I guess they have not played great every game this year, so you can't say they've been at their best every year. But from the Kirby Smart, Nick Saban, like, treats, like, those guys just seem that they find a new way every week to get them motivated. Like, I'll counter it. Like, if you're Georgia, this might be a good time to be playing Tennessee. You could argue, oh, they're mad, they're coming off a bad loss, but, like, they didn't play very well. They didn't look very good. So, like, I think Georgia could say, hey, this is a good time. Tennessee is down. Let's get on them early. Let's get the crowd out, and then we can, you know, kind of have our way. So I see what you're saying. You're always looking for, like, when's the best time, when's the worst time, but I don't think it's ever a good time to play Georgia.
Another strange one, of course, they're playing Chattanooga here, but Alabama's now got the hay in the barn. They're going to be in the SEC championship game. Is this arguably Nick Saban's best coaching job in a long time? Or do you look and say, you think so?
Yeah, I mean, just now we might have been wrong, but like a month ago we're saying, okay, where are they better than they've been in the past on offense? Definitely not quarterback. This is like a month ago. Running backs are fine, not elite. Offensive line had some issues. Who are the difference makers at wide receiver? And I think those questions still really apply, except maybe at the quarterback position. Let's not get carried away. Jalen Milroe's having a great run here, but he's not Bryce Young. He's not Mac Jones. Like, at least, you know, Mac Jones is the year he started. So clearly he has pushed the right buttons and they have gotten a lot better. Because they're, you know, on a great offensive roll. But, it's, you know, sometimes it's hard to say what's the best. Like, how are we going to sit here and say a year that they won the national championship, like, he didn't do a better job? But obviously we're kind of doing it in relative to how much talent they have.
Is Missouri and their situation, are we talking maybe coach of the year here if they can win the last two games? Like, what they're looking at a really nice bowl game if they can win out.
Yeah, I think, in fact, I was looking at our Stu Mandel does our projections, bowl projections, and I think he had Missouri in a New Year's Six bowl. You know, looking around the league, I mean, for SEC, you know, it's hard to say. Maybe it's Nick Saban if they win the league, but as far as expectations, and I think it's clearly Missouri. I mean, they haven't – there's nothing fluky about what they've done this year. They have been very, very good, love their balance on offense. Cook has been very good. You know, they got good wide receiver. So, yeah, I mean Drinkwitz has done a really good job. So right now, I think it would have to be between Nick Saban and Drinkwitz for Coach of the Year in the SEC.
And along the same lines, Louisville's at Miami this weekend. It's interesting. Miami is sitting there at 6-4, and they're, I think, still a point favorite over Louisville, who's sitting there at 9-1. But we can all remember Jeff Brohm, nice job at Western Kentucky. There was a time where it was reported, and it was inaccurately reported, that Jeff Brohm was going to be the next coach at Tennessee. Remember that whole absolute firestorm and crazy go-round when they were trying to replace, Butch Jones?
Yeah.
But here he is now back at his alma mater, 9-1. Did you see that coming? Did you see Louisville as a fringe top 10 team this quick?
No. I mean, I don't think anyone did. And, yeah, he's done a great job there. And, you know, I kind of applaud the way that he went about this. You know, he is a – He was doing a good job at Purdue. Louisville came after him a couple years ago when they hired Scott Satterfield. I think he clearly wanted to go, but he was like, I've only been at Purdue 2 or 3 years here. It's just not the right time. I'm not going to, like, kind of jump ship right away. And then it comes open again 3 years later or whenever it was, and he's like, you know what? I think this is the right time. Like, I've done my job at Purdue, and I'm comfortable with my decision now. So I just thought that was an interesting approach. But, yeah, he's done a great job, and he's a very, very good offensive coach. It's interesting you mentioned going to Miami, Miami one-point favorite. Miami has won, in Mario Cristobal's 2 years there, they've won two ACC home games, both in overtime.
Oh, my gosh.
So they have not been good at home. They've got quarterback issues. Now, they benched Tyler Van Dyke last week. The freshman comes in, Emory Williams, against Florida State. He gets hurt. So now Van Dyke is back in, the veteran, who's really had a disappointing season. So you talk about good times to play teams. I think this might be a good time to play Miami. Again, they don't play well at home. They're coming off an emotional loss to Florida State there. So a good situation for Louisville.
Mitch, how good is this Washington team? Because, I mean, with Penix at quarterback, he's obviously, and I guess it leads me to a question, too, who do you think is the front runner for the Heisman? But this Washington team led by Penix, how good are they? Because we don't get a chance to see much of them because they're out west. They beat a USC team. They've beaten Utah. They've beaten Oregon, Arizona. These teams that Arizona is now ranked in the top 25. If you look at their resume, they have a really tough resume that they basically went in and wreck shopped on a lot of people.
Yeah, I think it's fair to question their overall resume because I'm a big believer in, like, point margin in college football. It's like, you know, I'm not running up the score all that, but if you are consistently, like TCU, a slight tangent, like, I'm not surprised they're struggling this year. They were very fortunate last year. Give them all the credit in the world, but they had some very close games, some kind of miraculous wins. I'm not saying this Washington team's exactly the same, but they beat Arizona by 7. Great win against Oregon. No excuse. Don't have to say sorry for a 3-point win. But they beat Arizona State by 8. They beat a bad Stanford team by 9, which really Stanford blew the game. They beat USC by 10. Fun game. A Utah offense, which is really struggling, scores 28 against them in the first quarter. They win by 7. So they are kind of living dangerously right now. They've got a very tough game this week at Oregon State, who's playing well. So I would not be shocked if they lost. So they deserve to be ranked where they are, but it's also fair to call into question just how good they are because their defense hasn't been good late and they've been living dangerously. You can't – well, you can, but it's very difficult just to keep winning games by one score.
Yeah, but it's hard because how many teams in the – in the Pac-12, you know, you think of Utah and their defense, but Utah gave up 35 points to Washington. Utah's a tough team, but they've lost their share game. So you look at the Pac-12, and it seems like nobody plays defense in the Pac-12, but they all know how to play offense.
Yep. Fair point. I think when you get to the point where we're talking about you as a national champion, that's when we can find warts. Like, all these teams that are in the playoff hunt are really good, so you kind of – what might keep them from winning it? So, like, big picture, Washington's 10-0, amazing season. Kalen DeBoer doing a great job. But if we're going to talk about as a national championship contender, let's see what maybe they don't do well and why they might not win. Like, Oregon, if you look at their resume, other than that head-to-head loss, has played a lot better. Like, they go into Utah and just destroy Utah. Oregon, to me, is the more complete team. But, hey, they lost that game. I hope they play again, Oregon-Washington, in the Pac-12 championship game. That'll be maybe – well, hard to look past Alabama and Georgia. But I think Oregon-Washington championship game would be really, really fun.
But then that will completely take the Pac-12 out of the playoffs because if Washington lose –
I'd put Oregon in.
Oregon already has a loss.
And if Oregon beats Washington and beats them soundly, losing by 3 points on the road to Washington that only had one loss, I would definitely not rule out Oregon. A lot of things.
But what do you say to a Michigan or Ohio State who loses then in their championship game or who loses the head-to-head matchup? You know, they can say, well, we lost to Ohio State, who's the number one or number two team in the country. If Ohio State loses, they can say the same thing about Michigan.
Oregon, in my opinion, a one-loss Oregon team that won its Pac-12 championship would have a much better resume than a one-loss Michigan that did not win its division. Michigan's best win would be at Penn State. Oregon would have beaten Washington. They've won at Utah. You know, they beat USC. Better wins on that resume. Now, the thing that Ohio State has going forward, flipping that around, which I still would take Oregon over Ohio State has a win at Notre Dame, which is a good win. It's not a great win. But I think Oregon, one loss Oregon winning the Pac-12 would be in pretty good shape.
Last one for you, Mitch. Jimbo Fisher. When it was, the hire was made at the time, I thought that was a slam dunk. I thought if Texas A&M knows what they're signing up for in signing him to that long of a deal for that much money, they have the money to do it, and they're willing to pay for the consequences if it doesn't work out. Well, you're bringing a national championship head coach. But given how much money they signed him to for how long it was and the extension, add on the embarrassing fact that they gave him a blank national championship plaque and they didn't get to a conference championship game. They had one 10-win season under Jimbo Fisher. Was that the worst coaching hire in the history of college football?
Ooh. No, because they have the money to erase it. Like, it doesn't matter to them. And it's not the school right now. It's the boosters. And, like, I was on radio. I do College Station every week. Been doing it for years, and I was the host there was making the point. He wasn't like making excuses for the school. He's like, I know why it's a story, but why does it matter? Like, they've got the money to erase their mistakes. So this isn't University of Arizona that where the news comes out that they're like $250 million in the hole and all that, and they might have to be cutting sports. So the thing about the Jimbo Jimbo Fisher hire. I'm with you. Like, on paper, that looked at the time really, really good. What we kind of didn't know was that Jimbo, and this might be oversimplification, but was sort of a really good offensive coach that was set in his ways and wasn't really adjusting to the changes in college football. Like, he just seemed like he wanted to run his offense and didn't look around what was working at other – didn't see how Alabama was changing the way it went about its offensive football. Jimbo seemed to be running the same stuff in 2022 that he was in 2010, and you really can't do that. I mean, look at Alabama. Look at what Washington does. Look at what Oregon does. It's just very difficult to play that style, and I don't think Jimbo did a very good job adjusting. And he's like, I've got a national championship on my resume. You don't really tell me what to do, and he's a little stubborn, and this is where we are.
Mitch Light of The Athletic. Mitch, appreciate you as always. We'll chat next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, appreciate it. Caroline, Willie, D-Maze, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Join 102.5 The Game's Chase and Big Joe on the road at Black Tap Craft Burgers and Beer tomorrow from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Stop by and enter for your chance to win tickets to an upcoming Preds home game, Black Tap gift cards, and so much more. Black Tap boasts Nashville Scene's Best of Nashville Readers Poll wins for Best Burger, Best New Bar, Best New Restaurant, as well as Burger Week's Best Original Burger for its signature Tennessee Burger. Made me hungry. Let's get into some of your thoughts. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Anything is on the table. Mike Vrabel, Tennessee Titans, Will Levis. Reactions from the game on Sunday. What we just broke down with Mitch Light regarding college football. Anything is on the line. One texter texts in and says, what about Belichick, D-Maze?
What about him?
I don't know. But what about him? I don't know if that's for the next Titans head coach.
Is that a what about?
That was a direct question
kind of,
to D-Maze about what about Belichick?
Okay, based upon what we've talked about for the last 2.5 hours, Belichick is great. Belichick has 7 championships. You can say, well, Tom Brady, yeah, however you want to slice it, he has 7 championships or 6. So he's great. But as far as being a coach for the Titans, I don't know. I think you need – if indeed you're going to move away from Vrabel, which I'm not advocating for, I'm not – but if Amy chooses to go that way, then I'm not sure she wants to bring in – because he's going to want all control. And you already got a GM.
And looking at the Patriots right now, I understand Belichick's track record and his resume. The Patriots are awful.
Yeah.
Bill Belichick, born in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah. Coach, he has a house here.
Bring
Coach,
him home.
Coach Maurice Carthon, back in the day, he's got to tie into the Carthon family.
Trade for trade. Vrabel for Belichick.
Ooh, now we're talking. That's talk show stuff right there.
I'm good on Belichick.
Straight up talk.
Yeah, I'm good on Belichick, too. As much as, you know, he's one of the greatest. Nope.
Yeah, and y'all, I don't know.
For a rebuild. For, you're saying for, it's a rebuilding situation.
If fans,
so who's the right coach for a rebuild? If Vrabel says, I don't want it, I'm out. I'll go somewhere else, trade me, get a couple picks for me. Like, who would be?
I don't know.
I will
is
say,
there,
though.
Is there an answer? Is there a good answer for that?
I am not in the camp of fire Mike Vrabel. I think it's too soon after, you know, firing John Robinson and the Amy Adams drunk committing to Mike Vrabel. It's too soon in the Will Levis era. I think that consistency is an important and invaluable thing in the National Football League. But if the Patriots are willing to give you two first round picks, see ya.
Yeah, gotta go.
Gotta go.
I hope you pack your bags.
Yep. Hope you have a parka.
There you go.
Will Texan says, I wish that we still had John Robinson. It seems like the identity across the organization was fractured when he was fired on impulse, which put everyone on notice in a negative way. Trading AJ was a terrible move. Worst in team history. I'll stop there. Is that the worst move in team history?
If you're talking about trade, it has to be ranked up there because
it's got to be up there.
Yeah, because I don't think if you just look at based upon trading, like trading the guy that you had and trading him, or a young guy, yeah, it would be. But if you're talking about, you know, just guys, whether being cut or not, then it's probably one of them.
Mm-hmm.
The way this offensive line is going, I would say tops would be Jack Conklin, them not signing Jack Conklin back. That would be number one for me, at least in the Vrabel-Robinson era. But, you know, if you're talking about trade, yeah, it was the biggest. And the probably it just wasn't good for this organization if you just, you know, look at the last year or half a year.
And seeing what he became in Philadelphia and now Treylon Burks, how much he's been struggling, it makes it even worse.
What are the trades? Let's think of the trades. The Ryan Tannehill trade would probably be the best.
One of the best ones.
Trades in team history.
Yeah.
Like, I can't go way back into the Oilers days.
Let me see. They didn't trade for Godfrey.
There aren't a lot of trades.
Kevin Carter trade.
Kevin Carter was they traded the first round pick.
That was
to
a good
get Kevin
trade
Carter.
For them.
That was good.
Yes.
Was Randall Godfrey a trade or was that a free agent sign?
I don't know. See, I'm not. Yeah, I'm trying.
Jadeveon Clowney was a trade.
Jadeveon Clowney was a trade.
But it didn't materialize.
AJ
it wasn't a good one, but
yeah,
it was a trade.
Yeah, it was a trade.
Yeah.
They picked up the defensive back from the Chargers a couple years ago. A nice little pickup. We're talking about big trades here.
There hasn't been many.
AJ's, it was such
a game changer.
Especially if you talk about trading away an individual.
Mm-hmm.
That was the biggest.
Yeah.
In Titan history, because I can't remember even when I was playing us trading a marquee guy away. You know, especially a young guy. Floyd wasn't doing that. You know, a young guy with promise, he's not trading him away.
In that situation where it's time to re-up for the next contract, to do it then, boy, it's hard to argue.
Yeah.
It's hard to argue.
And this texter goes on to say, I felt significantly more confident with John Robinson at the helm because he was willing to drastically change things for what he believed was best for the team. Now, I don't know what this individual texter felt about John Robinson whenever he was the general manager, but there was a massive portion of the Titans fan base that wanted him out, that thought it was the bad drafting and then the trading of AJ, that now in hindsight, when you see what's on the other side and you see this Titans team that has struggled ever since John Robinson has gotten fired, I don't blame you for feeling that way. But let's not forget, but the 2021 draft, what are you getting from it? Dylan Radins?
Yeah, you're not getting
not get anything from your first round pick.
Yeah.
Not get anything in Caleb Farley. Dylan Radins was your second round pick. Not getting anything from a Monty Rice or a Brady Breeze.
But it's not even necessarily for me. It's not even necessarily those picks because I know GMs have those picks where they pick a first round guy and it just doesn't work out or pick a second. I understand, and it was only really like a 2-year period where it just went off the rails in regards to drafting guys. If fans want to be upset, y'all need to be upset of them choosing not to sign back Jack Conklin, them choosing to walk away from Davis and Janu, those choose, you know, the moves that they made not to keep guys, young guys, that were good for this organization. I'm not talking about what they're doing for any other organization, mm-hmm. even though Janu is coming on for the Atlanta Falcons. But for this organization, they were perfect. Jack Conklin was an all-pro. He did get hurt, but he came back and was solid. He was an all-pro. Mm-hmm. You had Janu that played his role well in his system. Corey Davis played. He was the prototypical number two guy to A.J.
Well,
Brown.
Okay, that just brought up another trade in my mind because they assessed it early. And John Robinson, as I remember, got out in front of it with Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith and basically mm-hmm. said, you guys are going to get better contracts elsewhere, mm-hmm. so good luck. But I don't know if in his mind at that point he already had his sights on Julio Jones, but the Julio Jones trade is a crossroads kind of thing. You could argue what they gave up and what they paid for Julio mm-hmm. Jones as opposed to paying the money it would have kept to keep Corey Davis mm-hmm. at the same spot, that's a trade that's worth going back to. It's not A.J. Brown. But you had A.J. Brown and Corey Davis, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. that mixed together very well. They weren't perfect, mm-hmm. but they were an excellent 1-2 punch to go with Derrick Henry. The chemistry was there, and they tried to one-up it by going to Julio Jones, and they end up going backwards. And they gave up draft picks, cost them a lot of money.
People kept looking at, oh, he was the number two or whatever it was. Number three,
number five pick
number
overall.
Number five pick in the draft.
That was all.
Anything he needs, we need to get him out of here because he's not producing to the number five pick overall. You're right. He's not producing, but he's still making plays for you. But essentially, you got your fifth pick in A.J. Brown, but you got him in the second round. So those two guys work well. You cannot have a legitimate passing attack without having a Batman and a Robin, whether it's a receiver and a tight end mm-hmm. or a receiver and another number two a number one receiver and a number two receiver. You can't – it's hard to have a legitimate passing game if you don't have more than one guy you can rely on. The Titans at that point in time had three guys. This is why I get so upset about it. You had three guys, and the fans screamed and yelled, oh, Julio is here. What did Julio give you? Not a damn
Nothing.
Thing. But you had a guy
that was, a whiff.
That was producing for you, A.J. Corey Davis, alongside a guy that was a bona fide number one in A.J. Brown. And then you had a tight end that was just perfect for what you were doing. And you said, to hell with all that. You can go and get you some more money somewhere else. You can go and look where your passing game is at even to this day.
Mm. Here's another one, a good trade. JD on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. DeMarco Murray, that was a good trade.
Yes, that was a good trade.
They got the last couple of good seasons for him, a solid pro, mm-hmm. good example for everybody else.
He was a pro bowler that one year, wasn't he?
He led the AFC in rushing, I think, the first year. He had over 1,200 yards for the Titans first year.
Adam in Portland texts in, and he's not very happy, mm-hmm. says, I don't trust Vrabel. He has zero accountability for anything that goes on with this team. Him saying that we're all to blame, we got to coach better, we got to play better, is such a cop-out. He should just not show up and take the fine. He's already thinking about who his coordinators are going to be in New England. Good. They can have him. Nobody here cares that you caught touchdowns as a linebacker. Go to where they care about that garbage.
See, there's no need to throw stuff at this point. I mean, they've done a very good job with him as the coach. He's done a good job to this point. My question all day long has really been not get him out of here, he's a bad coach, but has the cycle completed itself, and does he want to go through the next cycle mm-hmm. of the team mm-hmm. As the guy? Or could the team use a fresh start, and can he use a fresh start? And if so, he's a commodity that you actually might be able to trade.
He's an asset.
If it's not to New England, maybe it's somewhere else. You know, it doesn't happen very often, but you look at the draft capital that they need. But it all starts with a conversation between mm-hmm. Amy Adams and Mike Vrabel. Do you want to be the guy going forward here? I think he's earned that right. He's got a lot of respect from Amy Adams. Mm-hmm. But I think if he's being honest, does he want to go through that?
He's been a good coach. He's done a lot of good things.
What would Peter Laviolette tell him?
Yeah, get out.
Five and dive, baby. Yeah. Let's move on. Hey, Rangers are pretty good this year, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. They are. And I look at Mike Vrabel. He's done a lot of good things for this organization. And they put a lot of trust into Mike Vrabel when they decided to move on from John Robinson and elevate his role. But now the question has to be, what are you going to do to help make this team better? Because the offensive line didn't get better this past offseason, and that's not John Robinson's fault. You can't put that on bad drafts on John Robinson. It's have you acknowledged what are the biggest issues on this team? Because like we were talking about yesterday, I don't expect Mike Vrabel to throw the offensive line under the bus, but he said that the media has been making too big of a deal about how bad the offensive line is.
Another good trade from John Robinson. Excellent memory, Ryan, because I remember us talking about it the day it happened. Dennis Kelly for Doriel Green Beckham.
Yes.
That was
that
a pretty good trade.
Good
trade for John Robinson there.
That is a good one. That's a good one. Mark and Paris Jackson says it was a combination of letting good players go, bringing in bad players, and draft picks like Caleb Farley instead of taking Christian Darrisaw. Monty Rice was not a top 20 linebacker, and Robinson traded to move up and take him. I can go on and on and on. The reality is every organization is going to whiff on some draft picks. It's a matter of making sure that those whiff draft picks don't outnumber the amount of players that you cannot retain.
Yeah, and I can say, listen, I think Robinson did a good job his tenure here. Again, did he have some mistakes, some guys that they drafted he wish he could have had? But absolutely, that's any GM. But I think it's more so the guys that he chose not to really, you know, think about signing back, like put in the effort. Okay, this is the contract we want to give you. Now, if you find something, you know, much better somewhere else, okay, we at least tried.
Right.
We wanted to. We were, you know, proactive in trying to sign you back. But they didn't. You let guys that you drafted in the first round, you allowed them to get out of here. You allowed other guys that were playing well to go sign somewhere else. I mean, if you're going to raise – it's like if you draft these guys, you put all this time into drafting them, and they end up being good players for you, you should be the first one trying to retain them, you know, to keep them on your team. And for some guys, he just – it was like, oh, we're done with you. Go somewhere else. And maybe it wasn't that, you know, cut and dry and simple. Maybe it wasn't like that. But when you allow good players to leave your building, young good players. Now, I'll see if they were aging, something different. But young good players, you allowed to leave that building. It starts to mount up. And you start getting what we're seeing now.
Coming up next. Predators now sitting at 5-9, and we've said by Thanksgiving, you don't want to be digging yourself into a hole. They take on the Anaheim Ducks tonight. What do they need to do to ensure that they don't dig that hole any deeper? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 1025-1063, The Game. Caroline Willie D. Mace, we're live from Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena because the Predators are back in Nashville taking on the Anaheim Ducks tonight. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. We'll have your pregame coverage starting at 6 o'clock on 1025 The Game. And a little bit of breaking news that came out this morning from Andrew Brunette in the Nashville Predators. Tommy Novak will be out for the next 4 to 6 weeks, which obviously losing the offensive production from Tommy Novak puts this team in a difficult position, especially where they are in the standings. The Predators sitting at 5-9. And in the Western Conference, you're only above Calgary. Edmonton, who just fired their coach, and a frankly very bad San Jose Sharks team. This Predators team, if they want to dig themselves out of a hole pre-Thanksgiving and still keep the hopes alive for getting to the playoffs, which isn't the expectation, but of course it's where you want to be. It's where Barry Trotz wanted to be. It's where Andrew Brunette wants to be. You're going to have to start winning some games against a Ducks team that if you're thinking of the Anaheim Ducks of maybe the last 3, 4, 5 years, this looks like a different team.
Yeah, you want to play meaningful games. I think that's something that was a benefit to the group last year.
Yeah.
A credit to John Hines for keeping them engaged. They stayed in the race until the last week of the season, and I think there's a benefit long-term for that. So I think you don't want to get so far behind the pack that, you know, the pressure, the meaningfulness of the games changes some. And you know, they're not in a great spot right now. But the good news is in the West, especially, there's a large pack of teams where if you win three in a row, that's gonna it'll change a lot. You can still change. It's not like a lot of teams are running away with it. But every game is significant here. Now you've got to move forward without Novak, who was one of the bright spots, I think, of the first Baker's dozen games here, or 14 games. Hard to know what happened. Like, I know a lot of people were like, what happened? He played. He played. He had two assists on Saturday night. You know, it could have been something that happened very late in the game. Mm-hmm. It could have been something that he had been dealing with and playing through that worsened. You know, there's just a lot of different things. But 4 to 6 weeks, that's significant time. And so it's very unfortunate. The good news is they got Cody Glass back. And there's a guy, if you could circle a guy that here's a chance to step up and do more, I would circle two guys. Cody Glass is one. Was playing okay when he got hurt originally. Just getting back now. But he's a guy that needs to provide some offense, some scoring, some two-way steadiness. He's going to play on the line where Novak was with Evangelista and Sherwood, two guys that are playing pretty well. They had great chemistry with Novak. How's the chemistry with Glass? That's going to be a question here starting tonight. And then the other guy is Yusuf Parsons. They've been really, really trying to give him chance after chance. He looks so promising as a player, but he has slumped some. He has had some very inconsistent play since the first week or so of the season where he won the job on the start on the top line. Mm-hmm. What a great time for him to seize the opportunity here. I saw their lineup today. It looks like, and they said publicly, Phil Tomasino is going to sit out again tonight. So his ups and downs continue. He hasn't been able to grab traction here. So they've got a lot of question marks. And I think overall they need a little boost of confidence. They need a good game to get them back on track and feeling good about the direction everything's headed.
So what do you expect from them? Because the Ducks are last five games, they've only won two of their last five games. They've lost two of their last five games.
Yep.
So they're 3-2 in that span.
They've been better than people thought, the Ducks.
Yeah, so what do you expect from the Preds tonight?
I think if they can get off to a good start, which they did on Saturday, that would help a lot. And I did that. They've been really working at that. Like, how do we get off to a better start? Everybody wants to get off to a good start.
Yeah.
How do you try to do that? That's one of those mystical questions. When you're doing it well, nobody says anything. Just keep doing what you're doing. If you struggle in that area, like, do we need to change the pregame routine? Do we need to, you know, do something different with our meetings? Do we need to skate in the morning? Do we need not skate in the morning? Whatever worked, whatever they did on Saturday, that was how you want to come out in front of your home fans. The key is if you get off to the good start, then you can't have the letdown where you think, I think there was actually a time during that game where they thought, we got this, we're going to kill these guys. And all of a sudden, boom, they had a bad change on a power play as a guy was coming out of the penalty box. They gave him a free breakaway, and boom, it's 2-1. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, another puck off of a faceoff finds its way through traffic, and oh, it's 2-2. Then, to their credit, they build the lead back. And then I think they, again, were kind of like, all right, Saturday night, we got this 4-2. Next thing you know, they're down 5-4. It was a real frustrating night in that respect. So I think they're going to be thinking 60 minutes. There's got to be attention to detail for 60 minutes. Anaheim, I'm really curious to see what they look like because they're 8-6. I don't think anybody thought they would be 8-6 after 14 games. They've gone through a big transition. They're still going through it. They got a new coach, a relatively new GM that's been building for the long term, and they've gotten great early returns on some of their guys right now. They're playing really well, but I think they're beatable. So let's see what happens and see how they adjust without Novak in there.
Again, Predators in action tonight at Bridgestone Arena at 7 o'clock. Puck drop at 6 o'clock. Stillman & Company is up next. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m.
Be love and love on your people. Peace.
Closing time, one last call for alcohol, so finish your whiskey or beer.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it, but Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Catch the NBA playoffs on Sling TV, the most flexible live TV streaming service, putting consumers in control to watch games their way with flexible subscriptions. Want to catch one game or a full series on ESPN? Grab a 1, 3, or 7-day pass. If you want to catch as many games as possible, get a monthly subscription with our ABC, NBC, and ESPN combo package. Either way, Sling lets you watch the playoffs your way with no long-term contracts. Learn more at sling.com.